We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
Impress your friends, amaze your coworkers, make your family proud. Here's what you need to know.
I'ma tell you what you need to know. I'ma tell you what you need to hear.
Hour number four of the program.
You know, I actually forgot. You remember.
I got it. Nice. I didn't know. Do I do it for one, two, three, or just four?
No, you just,
four. So I didn't miss anything.
No.
I didn't miss anything. It's not Seren Petro,
and,
though.
And for folks who maybe, we do this every once in a while, sometimes we have to kind of have to explain for new viewers. You know, offensive linemen, when they go to the third or the fourth quarter, they were told the four fingers up. So we do this to start the 5 o'clock hour. And we have people that occasionally will actually tweet at us a picture of the four fingers
there
up.
You
they
go.
Know what's going on. So
they know exactly
it's always fun whenever we get
on.
A new person who's in. We're like, sometimes we'll just hold it when Caden was here. The first time he's here, we're just like, look at him. He's like, what?
What am I doing?
And then
now?
He just went,
cool, I'm in.
And yet, more often than not, Caden, there's a different finger he puts up. But
if I was getting bullied by you guys, I'd do two. But I was wondering, it was spinning in my mind before the 5 o'clock hour. I'm like, I don't remember if I was supposed to do it for one, two, and three.
No,
and so I was like, just a four. I'm like, I'm not screwing
to flip
this.
These guys off.
Yeah.
When we start the final.
I see it a couple times in the studio when I'm running.
4 o'clock is second half of the program.
There you go.
Final is fourth quarter.
Nailed it.
Which we do when we play this. And if we have a guest at 5 o'clock and we do this segment here later, we still do this at 5:20 because that's what we do.
It works.
There's certain
it
things
works.
Still the fourth quarter.
That we try, if we're really paying attention and we have a guest that starts at 5 straight up, we'll hold up the four fingers right then. But usually it's so embedded in us to be like, you know, we hear the need to know music and up goes the hands. There's other things like Twin Peaks serves their cocktails over ice balls. Curtis, you know all about that.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. You just hear certain things and you know exactly how
it
to respond.
It triggers you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing
even,
better
even
than
even during pre-recorded Twin Peaks commercials, Curtis will hear, and cocktails served over ice balls.
And I'll start to go, oh, that wouldn't me.
That's exactly.
This was when I was asked to fill in, and there were these sheets in front of me. I'm like, if I didn't have to do any of these reads, if I didn't have to do any of the liners, like, I don't think I'd be nervous at all. But when you have a liner, because I do this just like Ron Burgundy. Like, I don't really read through it. So I'm like, whatever you put on there, I'm going to read. I'm not going to stumble over it. I'll stumble over after I've said it.
Yeah.
So I'm like, reading through this,
you're racist.
I was like, I hope there's not a word I can't pronounce in here, because that happened a couple times in school where I'd stutter today, Junior.
I phonetically spelled Joe Spiker's name for you for just that reason, because Spiker is not spelled S-P-I-K-E-R, which is how it's pronounced.
You did a great job with these.
And I try. And one of my favorite things, though, you mentioned the Ron Burgundy, one of my all-time favorite moments of something like that happening was somebody that I know Seren and Curtis and I both love. I don't know how you feel about Charles Barkley. But
love him.
Years ago, he was doing some ad. He was doing these sketches for T-Mobile, because they were sponsoring something on Inside the NBA. And he was reading, and Ernie Johnson messed with the script a little bit just to see if Charles Barkley would do exactly that with Ron Burgundy. And Charles Barkley's going, "This Charles Barkley, I hope you enjoy an NBA on TNT in the NBA playoffs. And I hope you enjoy my T-Mobile skits. I'm a dumbass." It was awesome. It's on YouTube. If you want to find it, it is YouTube.
Arnie, you a world-class knucklehead.
See, the next time, just now that I've given you that information, I'll probably do that.
Yeah, there you go.
I probably will.
Some things happening in the NBA draft area today in our need to know. There's not a lot of news going around
there's
today.
There's not.
As Royals, let's mention the Royals
first. I was
going to
say, we got
Royals
we
and Mets coming up.
You said no news, but we are.
Coming up in about an hour.
We're at news dump time, so maybe something wild, something's going to happen soon.
Royals and Mets, Royals going for their eighth consecutive win tonight. They take on the Mets, another struggling team that the Royals hope to keep struggling. Michael Wacha versus Luis Severino. Mets are a slight favorite. -140, Royals are +120. I like that.
Shout out to two of my best friends.
I'll pop
who,
that bad boy.
Shout out to two of my best friends, Justin and Amy, high school sort of high school sweethearts. They knew each other in high school. They started dating later. Now married, two of my best friends. Justin from Long Island, Amy from around here. They met in high school.
Long Island.
And Justin, big Mets fan. Amy, obviously, big Royals fan. They will be there. Ooh. But I want to give them a shout-out because they were also there for Game 5 of the 2015 World Series. Great night for Amy. Rough night for Justin.
Can there be anything better than being a Royals fan walking into Citi Field tonight with your Royals jersey?
Just sweet. Like, oh, man.
You don't even have to say anything. Your jersey or your shirt or your hat is just the double burst.
Sends chills down
the
spine.
Hey, guys, what's been happening?
You know what's great about
this? I don't know. I just threw it on.
Oh, gosh, my Salvador Perez jersey. Oh, gosh, I don't know what this is. It has the 2015 World Series patch on the
champagne
shoulder.
Stain on
you
it somewhere.
You don't have to even say anything.
I love in sports how games like that, and of course, the World Series is the end-all be-all in baseball, but how it can start a rivalry between two franchises that do not cross paths at all. Like, if you went to a Mets fan and you said, give me your feelings on the Kansas City Royals, it would trigger them. And you go, I hate everything about that city. I hate that team. And even though there was anything controversial about that series, the Royals just kicked their ass in five games and left. Yeah. Like, that was it. It wasn't like there was a controversial Game 7 like there was here in 85. Mm-hmm. And that, well, there was a little bit of rivalry before that. But still, there was nothing like that. Like, it was just Daniel Murphy booting ground balls at second base and Matt Harvey staying out there too long. And then you have some bullpen meltdowns, yeah. Familia giving up the home run to Gordon. Like, you just
Mets fans are more mad at their team than they were.
Yes.
At the Royals.
Like, I even feel like here in Kansas City, now it's different because they've played the Giants in Game 7 in the World Series, and they've played the Niners twice in the Super Bowl. So there's a little bit more history between the Chiefs and Niners and the Royals and Giants. Like, San Francisco and Kansas City, there's more of a rivalry than there is between the Mets and the Royals. But still, tonight, if you went up to a random Mets fan that's tailgating and said, well, you know, what do you hope tonight in this game? Obviously a win, but I think in the back of their mind, they're like, I kind of want to squash him and end this winning streak they've had because I hate that franchise so much.
Of course, you don't ever get, one thing I always remind local fans when they're on the other end of this, you don't ever get revenge for
no.
postseason loss in the,
never
in
do.
The regular
never
season.
Never do.
It has to at least be in the postseason and probably the same line, though. But it will be, it's nice to be able to look at a series like this and not have to, well, this harkens back to 15 because so much of the Royals in the dormant years was, and it was by necessity, sometimes they're promotionally, it's the 10-year anniversary of the Royals World Series, the 15th, it's the 20th, it's the anniversary of this, the anniversary of that, and now, I mean, this might have been a look back, let's look, if this was last year, you say, gosh, what's happened to the Royals since then?
Yep.
Look at them at Citi Field and harken back to 2015 and that wonderful season. Now the Royals go to New York, and everyone watching the game is like, let's kick some ass and win eight in a row.
Yep.
And there isn't that feeling. So it's just so much better when the team's winning and you can just concentrate on what's going on the field. And it's been a few years since they've been in a situation where they could legitimately be excited about a series on the road.
So. You mean you didn't like it when the Royals were barreling toward another 100-loss season in mid-July and they're playing the Yankees and the only thing Royals people will talk about is the Pine Tar game?
Mm. Yes. Or every year when the Cardinals came and it was, let's try it out the 80. But that's what they had. That's all they had.
How
many years did we hear promos for a series at the K, and it was come see Ken Griffey Jr. and the Seattle Mariners come to town. The attraction was the other team, and you kind of forget about those days when things are going good, but when things are going bad for a while, you forget about what it's like to be able to sit down and watch a Royals game with an expectation that not only are we going to be in the game, that they probably will win. And we talked about this with Danny, we're 13 games in, but doesn't it just feel completely different?
It feels amazing.
You 9-26 a year ago, 9-4 this year, and baseball is such a day-to-day thing, obviously, that when things are going poor, it's just like, do I even want to sit and watch this again?
Yeah.
It's the complete flip when they're doing well. You can't wait for game time to come around because you want to watch Bobby Witt Jr. You want to watch MJ Melendez. You want to watch them pitch and play these, you know, and it's exciting thing to see. Those who can see it.
Those who have the Bally subscription or can get to a restaurant where they got it,
right,
or they're listening to the game. I look at what this first 13 games has been for this city. There has not been competitive baseball in a long time. And I know that there was a much longer drought from 85 to 2015, and there were some embarrassing teams. But I just, going back to one of our first topics today, it was that more so for the fans that are just waiting for disaster, right? Not trying to embrace, like you're almost afraid to get hurt again. It's like when you were in high school and you had a crush on somebody, and it's like, I'm not going to get so ahead of myself because I don't want to be let down. I don't want to fully embrace this crush because I might be hurt by it. And that happens from scarring. Where have you been wrong before in your life, yeah, from past crushes that maybe you did get shot down, you didn't get to go on that date. And with this team,
it's happened 35 times for me just since 2000.
And you know, the good part about it, though, you just keep trying. And that's my...
Or you give up.
Or you can give up. You can take that approach of, I just don't want to watch this team. But that's where I'm looking at this 9-4 start. They're a lot of fun. I personally now, every single time after work, I plan around the game. I have to get the lawn, I have to mow the lawn before the game. I have to go do grocery shopping before the game. I got to get this done before the game. I don't want to miss any of it right now because they've won so much in a row. They've got talented players. And for those that are skeptical going, it's April, they're going to be terrible, what are you afraid of?
Yeah.
If it does happen,
you might as well dive in.
You might as well embrace it.
Because part of it is, because the ultimate payoff may not be, you know, probably won't be a World Series or even a postseason game. If you don't enjoy the success when it's happening because you're not convinced that the end result will be what you want, then you will lose out on everything. This is the part of it. This is what makes it fun. So by all means, and as we also discussed earlier, this looks a lot more legit than some earlier. Anyone who's been a Royals fan for a while knows what we're talking about. That there were some stretches where they played well at the beginning, but you could look at the ancillary numbers and look at what the numbers, who the success was coming from, and go, that's not going to last. This looks like it might last for a little bit. And who knows? They might fall back and do what the Pirates did a year ago and start 20-8 and fall back and beat, you know, 8 or 10 games under 500. But that's a lot better than being 56-106. And you can at least see this team progressing to a launching point pad that they can maybe use that. Because 100 losses to the postseason in 2 years, it's happened three times, and one of those teams won the World Series last year. The other team was the one seed in the American League, and so it's that quick turnarounds are certainly possible. So just enjoy the trip. We've got news now. Speaking of Lionel Messi earlier, this comes from our friend Daniel Sperry, who covers Sporting and the Current for the KC Star. Says Miami assistant coach Javi Morales says Lionel Messi will be available for the game. They will see how he feels today, but he feels well and is ready to play as long as he can. So,
thank God.
If you're going out there, they should have never moved the game in the first place. But
no.
Because you don't know what's going to happen. But it is what it is, and it does look like those fans who are going to be at the game will at least get to see the greatest player in the world for at least a little while.
I feel like that's the best outcome in this game, win or lose, because Major League Soccer, it needs events like this, and Kansas City is capitalizing on being really the talk of the sports world. You know, you get the World Cup, there's a new airport now, you know, the Chiefs are trying to go for a three-peat now, the Royals are playing better baseball. Like, this is perfect right now to move the soccer game to Arrowhead Stadium. You know, it resonates with the Chiefs, and then you get a global superstar in Messi, and he's going to be available.
It does appear to be the gamble appears to be working out at least a little bit.
Yes, very much so.
Some news on the NBA draft front. UConn 7-2 sophomore Donovan Clingan, one of the cornerstones of their championship run, will enter the 2024 NBA draft. Number 3 prospect in ESPN's top 100 list. It will be in the running for the number 1 pick. I don't think he'll be there, but I think he'll be maybe 2, 3, or 4. Duke's top 2 scorers from last season, All-American Kyle Filipowski and ACC All-Freshman selection Jared McCain, are entering the NBA NBA draft, and two guys not entering the draft but moving on. Alabama guard Ryland Griffin and Texas A&M guard Wade Taylor have entered their names in the transfer portal. Taylor averaged 19 points a game for the Aggies and nearly drove them to the SEC championship. Yeah. So tournament championship. So some talent there. Ryland Griffin about 12 points a game for Alabama, but. NCAA basketball free agency has two more names in the room.
Worth noting now, the three names that Curtis just put out there for the putting their names in the NBA draft, they will all stay there because they're all destined to be very high picks. But it is worth noting that I think it was last year or 2 years ago, you can now put your name into the draft as many times as you want and maintain your eligibility. For the longest time, once you were in, you were in. Then it was, okay, you could test the waters once and come back. They've since changed that. So those three names that Curtis gave, those guys are staying. But if you hear, especially to the local guys, wait, he's testing the waters? What are you talking about? He averaged 6 points a game. This is a chance to network, meet some people, learn about your game, learn what NBA guys think about your game. So you're going to hear some names that you're like, he's not even close to an NBA guy, but that's what's going on. You can dip your toe in as much as you want and still maintain your eligibility.
If I'm not mistaken, I think there's a little bit of smoke with Ryland Griffin in Kansas. It was reported that Kansas was one of the first schools to reach out to him.
And Kansas was among the finalists when he chose Alabama.
That's right.
So that's worth noting.
Texas native, by the way, so I'm sure the Longhorns are going to be in the running as well.
Hey, come over.
Kenny Gore.
Just put KU.
We got some money to give you.
A guard.
Because they couldn't guard anybody last year.
No, they couldn't.
There was a great quote last night at the KU basketball banquet, Bill Self speaking with the media, and KU fans really loved this. Our shortcomings this year will be addressed and will be as good as we've ever been in the very, very near future. Now, Bill Self knows that every time he's talking with the media, he's talking with fans, so of course he's going to say that.
Mm-hmm.
But I always harken back to the dude called a shot ahead of the 2022 Final Four, so he's confident.
It's not a roster overhaul they have to have, because I think a lot's going to be back from last year. I actually think Hunter Dickinson's going to be back. You'll have K.J. Adams. You've got DeJuan Harris, so there's three starters. I doubt Murphy comes back.
Murphy's coming back.
I'm not either, but then you have Zeke Mayo, who transferred from South Dakota State, so maybe there's four starters, and then who knows about Ryland Griffin?
They're all the NBA, way too early, or NCAA way too early. So they're in the top five.
Mm-hmm.
They were the third best odds on FanDuel for a championship next year. So, I mean, you're never more than an offseason away from being a championship contender when Bill Self is your head coach at Kansas.
I like how you said college basketball free agency fully underway.
That's basically what it is.
You never know. Your starter could be leaving. Your leading scorer could be leaving for all you know.
The odd thing about that, though, is that, hit this quickly, in the NCAA, only one-year contracts. Imagine NBA free agency with everything as a one-year contract. That's college basketball right now.
Pandemonium. We are going to pivot to some Royals baseball next with Joel Penfield of the KC Sports Network and co-host of One Roy Way. He's coming up on the Border Patrol. On Sports Radio 8.
Or the program.
The Border Patrol. Not the program on Sports Radio 10 WHB. Welcome back into the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I am your host, Jack Johnson, filling in for Seren Petro today. And we're going to jump back on the phone lines as we are joined by Joel Penfield of KC Sports Network and co-host of One Royal Way. And he's brought to you by Twin Peaks. Can't make it to Augusta? Twin Peaks is the best place to catch the Masters. They have TVs wall to wall, and you can grab a 29-degree draft beer and something from their made from scratch menu. Twin Peaks eats, drinks, scenic views. Well, first things first, Joel, thanks for coming on the show. And what a perfect time to be hopping on Sports Radio 810 WHB, because the Royals, who are about to begin a series with the New York Mets, have won 7 in a row. So let's start there. Did you ever think in your wildest dreams that in the month of April, a Royals team post 2015 could win 7 in a row?
And this is pretty incredible. And I would be lying to you if I said that I thought that this would be a possibility early on in the season. The schedule was going to be really tough. They played a bunch of playoff teams right out the gate, and they found a way to play 13 really solid baseball games. I know that they're 9-4, so it's not like they're firing on all cylinders entirely, but they played really competitive, really good baseball early on. That gives me hope that this is going to continue into the summer and hopefully into the fall, that this team is going to find a way to hang around in the AL Central, and I think all of the tools are in place there for them to do that.
Now, run differential can be a little bit odd at the beginning part of the season because the sample size is so small. But really, through 13 games, this just hasn't been a good team. This has been one of the most dominant teams in all of baseball. They've got a league-best run differential right now, plus 39 going into this series against the New York Mets. What can you take away from this so far? Is there something to this run differential through 13 games? Or is this just that sometimes they're blowing out a couple teams, they're not losing by too much, but just wait maybe 20 or 30 more games and that'll even out?
It'll probably even out to some degree over the long haul of the season, but a plus 39 run differential in 13 games is nothing to sneeze at. That is a significant amount of dominance to where this team is at. They're hitting the ball well. They're all hitting the ball really hard, which is usually a good indicator of success in the big leagues over the course of the length of a season. And their pitching has been fantastic outside of a couple bullpen blowups, which has not been an issue since they moved Will Smith out of the closer role. They gave it to James MacArthur and have let John Schreiber and Chris Stratton kind of be the firemen in there. Changing up those roles seems to have made a bit of a difference. And the starting pitching every day has been, it has kept them in a ball game, even if it hasn't been the dominant Brady Singer seven inning, no run type of start. But Cole Reagan's going five innings, only giving up three without his best stuff is indicative of, a team that's going to find a way to keep themselves in every single game with their pitching. And if the pitching keeps them in it, the hitters are going to be able to do just enough to win like we saw on Monday night. That was a great team win for what we saw there on Tuesday, the first game of the Astros series.
We're talking with Joel Penfield of KC Sports Network and co-host of One Royal Way right here on the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's go to that rotation right now because seemingly they can do no wrong right now. You felt like if the Royals were lucky going into the season, three of those five were going to be pretty stable in the rotation and could keep them in a lot of games. But really, it's been all five at this point. I mean, your number four starter in Brady Singer, he was on MLB Network today. He seems to have, at least early on, returned to 2022 form. Alec Marsh had one really good start in Baltimore and then just kept the team in it against the White Sox last Sunday when they were facing the White Sox number one in Garrett Crochet. But what is the sustainability of this group right now? We obviously know they're not going to get through 162 games with a sub-2 ERA, but where do you think realistically they can end up?
What's interesting is when you look at where the Royals are at, almost entirely through the rotation between Reagan, Lugo, Waka, Singer, and Marsh, the expected numbers, like the xERA, the xFIP, and some of those numbers that kind of takes into account a little more than just the raw data that you see, on the box score at the end, it doesn't have the Royals significantly regressing in any of these spots. I think the biggest one may be Seth Lugo, but even still, the expected ERA is somewhere around 3.5. So it's not like there is reason to look at this and go, okay, this is all fool's gold. What the Royals are doing is not sustainable. And it's not like we're going to see the Royals be the best rotation in all of baseball over the course of 162. I don't think you can expect that, given, some of the other rotations that are out there for some really top teams. But even if they regress to the mean slightly, which I expect to happen, at some point, they're not going to keep up this type of heater as much as we all want them to. But they have the potential to be, maybe a top 10 rotation in all of baseball, mm-hmm. if they're able to stay healthy with what they're able to do, which would be, a top 10 rotation would definitely put them squarely in the race for the AL Central, as the season progresses.
I want to go back to that series against the White Sox, and it was game two. You go back to last weekend, and the Royals were hanging on to a one-run lead at the time. Will Smith, who had struggled in Baltimore, he gets another opportunity to close out a game against the White Sox, and Doesn't get too far into that outing. Luis Robert doubles, actually hurt himself rounding first base. And Matt Quatrero has the quick hook. He immediately goes to James MacArthur. I was at that game, and MacArthur was warming up to begin the ninth. Like, there was no faith whatsoever that Will Smith was going to lock it down 1-2-3. What did you make of that quick hook, and maybe now James MacArthur taking this closer's role and running with it? Was it more so of, hey, we're not going to give you too many chances here? Or was that Will Smith went into Matt Quatrero's office and said, hey, however you want to use me, that's fine?
I think that was probably the last time we'll see Will Smith be the primary option as the closer for the Kansas City Royals this season. That's not to say we won't see him in the ninth inning if some other guys are used up, but I would guess at this point he's probably the fourth option to be the closer right now, to close out a ninth inning if they need it. James MacArthur, John Schreiber, Chris Stratton will all get those opportunities before Will Smith at this point. That felt like a changing of the guard in some way of, okay, I'm going to give you this chance, but first sign of danger, you're out. And I thought that was a significant growth for Matt Quatrero as a manager, not just, okay, hey, we paid this guy to be our closer, we're going to send him out there no matter what, whether he's struggling or not. This was, hey, this is not working. We have to make a change. We have to do it now because we need to win this game. And they, and like you said, James MacArthur was warming up immediately. He comes in, gets the double play, game over. Felt like that is where James MacArthur became your primary closer that night. And I think that's the way it should be until proven otherwise.
We're talking with Joel Penfield, co-host of One Royal Way and from KC Sports Network, right here on the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jumping over to this offense, you know, now Vinny Pasquantino gets rolling. He's joining alongside Michael Garcia, Bobby Wood Jr., who's playing at MVP level. Salvador Perez has seemingly turned back the clock. MJ Melendez continued his success from the second half. Nelson Velasquez continued his power success from the second half. I mean, when everything is clicking, you can see outputs like yesterday, a 9-run first inning, just bludgeoning pitchers who aren't scrubs, who aren't AAA guys. I know in game two of the Houston series, they saw Eric Geddy, who was making his major league debut. But it feels like at this point in time, this is an offense, when it's clicking, nobody wants to see in baseball. Would you agree with that statement?
This is the playoff offense if they can keep things going. I fully believe that. And it's crazy how much expectations change. Like, before the season, my prediction was 74-88, which would have been an 18-win improvement from last season. And if that's where they ended up, I think I'd still be okay with it. I checked Fangraphs this morning because their projections are ever-changing based on how the team is doing. They currently have the Royals that projected 81-81. And my first thought was, that might be low. If they're going to play like this, and this isn't a fool's gold month of April like we saw in 2021, which I don't think it is because that 2021 team had a negative run differential at the end of April. So that it was not a sustainable run. This offense just keeps pitchers on their toes because they are aggressive in the strike zone. And if you leave anything over the plate like Hunter Brown did pretty much the entirety of the first inning, you're going to get crushed. And with Vinny getting going now, which I had a feeling was going to come at some point, he was still walking more than he was striking out. He was swinging and missing at the lowest clip of his career. So it was just a quality of contact issue and just kind of finding the timing after missing the majority of last season with a shoulder injury. He sees that double go down the line against Eric Geddy, and you could tell that was going to get him rolling. And, I mean, a two-game swing of, you know, it's going from zero RBIs to eight, taking his weighted runs created plus, I think, from -2 to 84 in two games. He gets going, and it completely changes the complexion of the offense. Because Michael Garcia is already going to see a lot of stuff, pitches to hit, because you don't want to give him a free base to get to Bobby Wood Jr. Bobby Wood Jr. is not going to – they're not going to pitch around him if Vinny's getting going, because Vinny then can drive in two guys. And then you don't want to leave, you know, then you don't want to walk Vinny because Salvi's right behind him. And then MJ and then Nelson Velasquez. The 1-6 is dangerous. You have six guys that can legitimately go bridge on you at any point or do damage against you if you leave anything over the plate. So it is it's kind of remarkable how just one guy getting going in Vinny Pasquantino, who's a fantastic hitter, and it was just a matter of time, completely changes the complexion of the offense.
I remember we had this discussion in the offseason, Joel, about Nelson Velasquez, who you just touched on a little bit right there at the end of your answer. And we all know about the power. We knew there was 30 home run power, especially in the second half of last year. But what could take him from this 25, 30 home run guy, but 200 strikeout guy, was what he was able to spit on. You know, those breaking balls in the dirt, the sliders down and away, and really having a controlled swing, having good barrel control. And the last 2 to 3 games, there's been a couple of times, and it was mainly this Houston series, the ball was on the outer half of the plate, and he just poked it to right field. And that maybe got me more excited than the 430-foot home runs, because that's showing, hey, I can watch those pitches dive away and get in the dirt. I'm not going to swing at it. And if you try to pitch me out there, I'm just going to make it simple and go the other way. I feel like that is a transformative part about him as a hitter and what can take him to the next level. What say you?
It feels like he has made it has been a point of emphasis for him to work the ball the other way with more regularity, especially when he's down in the count, and not just try and get to pull happy and try to get to his pull power, which is otherworldly. So that to me is growth and maturation of a hitter, which again, I think changes the complexion of how I view him. If he was a just dead pull, I'm going to try and hit everything out to left field, like, that's fine, but you're sacrificing a ton of batting average, probably a ton of walks too, mm-hmm. and you're striking out, north of 35%. He's right at about 35 right now. So if he's able to get that number down to about 30% and get the walk rate up around 10, I mean, we're talking about a guy that I think ultimately, when it all evens out, hits here around 245, but with his ability to slug, the OPS is going to be over 800. Weighted runs created plus, probably somewhere around 120, 130. And if that's what you get out of Nelson Velasquez, that's fantastic. And when you look at the other side of that trade now, Jose Kloss has been bad for Chicago this year, and he just got sent back down to AAA. Mm-hmm. And Nelson Velasquez is an integral part of the Royals lineup. So that's another example of why you trade relievers at their peak value, so you can get guys like Nelson Velasquez on your team.
I'm not going to champion the guy behind him, or at least hitting one or two spots behind him every single night. And Hunter Renfro, I mean, when you're hitting sub 200, we're not going to say that you are a thriving hitter or you are getting hot. But Hunter Renfro is in the middle of a 6-game hitting streak, seems to have a better approach than he did in the first 4 to 5 games of the year. If Hunter Renfro gets going just a little bit, and we feel like even in a down year, he's shown the last 4 to 5 seasons, a down year for him is still running into 20 to 25 home runs. And for this Royals lineup, that would be your 7 or your 8 hole hitter. So if Hunter Renfro gets going, you talk about the top 6 in that lineup, what's the ceiling for this offense? Is this a top 5 offense in baseball? Is it just top 10? Is it top 5 in the American League top 10? Or where do you think it falls if you've got 1 through 7 really showing you some strong potential?
Conservatively, if Hunter Renfro starts hitting for a little more power, you're looking at a top 10 offense in all of baseball, and probably greater than that. If Hunter Renfro turns back the clock a little bit a couple of years, not to last year, but to 2022, when he was pretty good in Milwaukee, there's real potential for what this offense can be. And I'm not going to bank on that, because I think he might be on the other side of this, kind of on the back nine of his career at this point. He has a hard time with velocity, which has been a point he's been chasing. He chases in 2-strike counts more than I would like for a guy that's been in the league for nearly 10 years. But what if he gets going, there's a lot to like, but I'm not going to bank on that at this point. I want to see it a little bit more from him. But I imagine we might see him play in more of a platoon type situation at this point if he doesn't get it going, and we'll see where it goes.
We're talking with Joel Penfield, co-host of One Royal Way and on KC Sports Network. And he is brought to you by Twin Peaks right here on the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I want to talk about this attendance a little bit. I know it's early on in the season, and I think Royals fans almost just have ingrained in their minds,
April is a bad month for the team. They're not going to be very good. They're not going to win many games. The weather may not always be the best in Kansas City, but it's been quite the opposite in 2024. The team is winning. They just had their first undefeated homestand of seven games or more since the 80s. They are clearly firing on all cylinders. The weather's been doable, I would say. I mean, if it gets chilly, it's in the mid-50s to low 50s. Not many rainouts to deal with, not too much wind to deal with. I know that it was very windy, actually, on the game yesterday in which the Royals thumped the Astros. But you get this good combination of winning baseball and good weather. What do you expect to see on this next homestand? They're going to get the AL East reigning champions and the Baltimore Orioles, one of the most exciting, fun, and young teams in baseball. No matter what happens on the road trip, do you expect to see an attendance increase, or are we going to be dealing with a sparse crowd until this team gets into the summer and is still playing winning baseball?
I do think people are kind of jaded a little bit still, and I don't blame them over the last couple of years with how poorly the team has played in April. And so I imagine there is an element of people kind of waiting to see their shoe to drop of when are they going to start to lose games consistently? Because then it makes more sense for me to not have to go out to the ballpark because they're just not a very good team. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's going to happen. If they go and they take two or three from the Mets and they take two or three from the White Sox, which I think conservatively they should be able to do, you go 4-2 on a road trip, come back, and that would be have the Royals at 13-6 with another seven-game homestand coming up. That Friday, the game, the 19th, against the Orioles could be packed because I think people could really buy in. See, and especially if the run differential stays and they're winning games dominantly and they're still pitching really well and all the things we've seen over the first 13 games continue to hold true, I see a scenario where the attendance starts to come up a little bit. I don't blame people for being a little bit of, you know, being a little concerned or having a, you know, some, you know, a little bit of a more cynical view considering what we've seen the last few years. But I do believe this team is different, and I hope that they continue to show that and prove me right.
Yeah, I think attendance is such a tough thing to dictate in the first month of the season. I mean, a lot of teams out there, even good ones, aren't drawing because it's still in the middle of the school year, or at least the tail end of the school year. You may not be getting the best type of weather, but it was very important from the get-go that this Royals team had to perform in April. And I think, Joel, that's been the most impressive thing. You know, they didn't even get the luxury of getting through the first couple weeks of April and be 3 or 4 games under 500 and sell fans, hey, we're really good. It has been such the opposite. They are a half game out of first place. I get it's 13 games, but they've got the best run differential in baseball. They've won 7 in a row. That's their longest win streak in the month of April since 2015, of course, when they won the World Series. Not saying that that's going to be the same thing, but I'm so impressed with the fact that this team had division title expectations put on them from people at MLB Network. They were this fun, young, and exciting team. They extend Bobby Witt Jr., and they could have simply fallen back and said, oh, if we're just 4 or 5 games under 500 at the end of April, we're going to be fine. But because of the way last year went, because of the way things went really every year since 2017, the Royals have been buried in this month. And the fact they're playing like this right now, I think it is so unbelievably important for the rest of the season because people, quite frankly, are starting to buy back in. Do you kind of share that same sentiment?
I do. And like I said, they've started out so poor the last few years. And with the way the schedule really didn't do them any favors to start, I was like, God dog it. Are we really going to have to deal with a bad April and have to see this team have to dig themselves out of it? But instead, they've played really competitive baseball. Even in the games that they've lost, I feel like they've at least given themselves a chance to win, which we haven't seen very often. Normally, they lose games like the games they won against the Astros just get blasted there a few times. We haven't seen that at all. It's been a lot of one-run games, you know, games that have been contentious into the late innings. They're learning how to win. They're playing competitive. They're giving themselves a chance. And it seems like the leadership within the clubhouse has these guys, you know, firing on all cylinders. The vibes, for the lack of a better term, are really good right now. And there is a lot to like, not just within the win-loss record, like the run differential, like the hard hit percentage, what the pitchers have been showing. This isn't a fluky 9-4 by any stretch. So they have to continue to show it. They got to go on the road, you know, to the Mets and go win a few games there, and then you get the White Sox, who are an unmitigated disaster. You got to go win that series. They do that, we're sitting pretty, and I think we're talking about a Royals team that is actually for real and not just a nice story at the beginning of the season.
We're talking with Joel Penfield of KC Sports Network and co-host of One Royal Way right here on the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Last couple questions for you, Joel. We really appreciate your time. Let's look at the American League Central. Right now, who is the team that strikes the most fear in you? Is it Cleveland, who's in first place? Is it Minnesota, who's struggling right now, but of course the reigning champs? Is it a Detroit team who, kind of like Kansas City, got given some expectations in the offseason? Who do you think of those teams? I know we're not going to consider the White Sox a threat, but of the other ones, who's the biggest threat to the Royals in the Central?
Oh, it's tricky because I don't know, and this might just speak to how poor the Central is in general, but Minnesota's really not hitting right now. They'll pitch. Like, Pablo Lopez is great, but I don't know how much they're going to be able to pitch. Cleveland, obviously a massive gut punch, not have, you know, with Shane Bieber going down with injury, and they have some other injury concerns and a very young rotation, but they pump out so many really good young pitchers that they're going to find a way to piece it together, and that offense is really solid. I just don't buy into Detroit. I just can't. I know Skubal is great, but Torkelson's really struggled out of the gate. Obviously, the Javi Baez contract looks awful. That offense is pretty inconsistent. They dropped the series to Oakland early last week, so I have a hard time taking that seriously. I'll probably go with Cleveland just because of the consistent track record that they play with, but I also don't know if any team really scares me a ton, and that's not me saying that I think the Royals can run away with the division, but I just don't think there's a team that's really right now head and shoulders above anybody else.
Joel, I think there's two teams from last year that are going to be compared to the Royals at least early on in the month of April. One of those being Pittsburgh, who started the year, I believe, 20-8, had a good run differential, but they ended up only winning 76 games. Still would be a 20-win improvement compared to last year for Kansas City. And the other, if you're more of the glass half full type of person, would be the Arizona Diamondbacks, who got off to a really hot start. They built around a star. Arizona had Corbin Carroll. Royals have Bobby Witt Jr. You piece together a rotation. It wasn't a lights-out dominant rotation, but it had good pieces to it, right? And I think Arizona had a much better bullpen, had more pieces in place than the Royals did, but you can kind of squint and see some similarities. So if you had to make a pick right now, would it be more so on the Arizona side of comparison, the Pittsburgh side of comparison, or maybe just right in the middle?
I kind of want to middle this because I don't want to get too far over my skis with optimism with the Royals because I still want to see it over a larger sample. If we have this conversation, maybe this time next month, I'll be a little more confident if they keep winning. But I'm still kind of trying to stay, kind of middle this one as much as I can because I do think this team could have a Diamondbacks-like trajectory. Maybe not for this year, but next year. I don't think they have the Pittsburgh Pirates in them because I think this overall ceiling of the roster is higher, and I think the floor is higher for what the Royals have right now and what they've shown through the first 13 games. So I'll middle it for now, but maybe if we talk next month and the Royals are still playing well, maybe I'll lean a little more toward the Arizona Diamondbacks side.
All right, Joel, to wrap up this interview, we're going to play the final four. And if you're not familiar with that, I'm going to give you four rapid-fire questions, and you're just going to give me a one-word answer. And the final four is brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If you suffer an orthopedic injury in everyday lives or playing sports, the University of Kansas Health System offers orthopedic walk-in care at I-435 and Null. Open weekdays 8 a.m. till 7 p.m. and Saturdays from 8 a.m. till 2 p.m. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics. All right, Joel, so the final four questions I have for you. Number one, what is your favorite Major League Baseball movie?
Bull Durham. I think it's the best representation of what minor league baseball is like.
Who was your favorite player growing up?
Ichiro.
Where is your favorite barbecue spot in Kansas City?
I'll go with Slaps. I think it's pretty underrated.
And lastly, who is going to win the World Series in 2024?
Dodgers.
All right, Joel, well, thanks so much for your time as always. We really appreciate it, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thank you, Jack. I appreciate it.
But first, the good sense, end of the hour answer. Two men have played at least 300 career games for both the Royals and Mets. I asked for either one. One of them seems obvious.
Beltran.
Carlos Beltran, 795 for the Royals, 839 for the Mets. The other one, got to go back about 10 years for his tenure with the Royals, but he has royalty in his bloodline.
Yes.
Son of a former major leaguer, a Royals Hall of Famer.
And a great postseason rant manager.
Yep. Our good friend Brian McCray, 614 games with the Royals, exactly 300 games with the New York Mets.
That's crazy to think about. We talk about legacies in baseball, right? Jackson Holliday. By the way, that's always baffled me. Could you imagine the percentages for somebody like Matt Holliday to have not one, but two kids that are likely going to be the number one overall pick?
Yeah. Ask Archie Manning.
What do you do in life get the jackpot like that?
Ask TJ, JJ, and whoever wants
Griffey's.
The Bosa's.
In the coaching realm, actually, let me take that back because Dan Hurley was a much better coach than Bobby was at Arizona State. Yeah. But Bobby was the better player and won championships at Duke. So college basketball bloodline.
But it doesn't always work out that way.
Ask
Pete Rose Jr. where his Hall of Fame plaque is. I mean, it helps, but having a good bloodline probably helps, but that's just part of the deal.
Jealous.
Growing up around major leagues probably helps, but Bobby Witt Jr. is great because he's great, not because he's
great.
Bobby Witt's kid.
Oh, man. What you could do to just have a type of bloodline like that, it's truly impressive. That's going to do it for another edition of the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I've been your host, Jack Johnson, filling in for Soren Petro. Big thanks to Curtis Ebo. Big thanks to Adam Rivetta and every guest that we had today. And we will talk to you on Monday.